to you. I'm Monica Schneider. We are again going to be taking you live inside the courtroom for the murder trial of Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke. They're bringing the jury in court today. We're expecting the defense to officially rest its case, with the prosecution to potentially call some rebuttal witnesses. Now, I can tell you, we understand that the defense, however, this morning objected to some.
They're real.
They're always so positive.
They're experienced.
The state's unpaid bills have been arrested.
They have everything you need to know. And some things.
Both sides into the judge's chambers to work things out. That's as much as we know. But they were calling the jury in, and we expect things to get underway shortly. Of course, yesterday was a big day for the defense because a long-asked question was answered. Yes, Officer Van Dyke did take the witness stand in his own defense. He testified in defense of his 2014 fatal shooting of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald. It's a shooting that he is being prosecuted for, first-degree murder charges. However, Van Dyke told the court that he shot the teen because radio traffic convinced him that officers were under attack by a knife-wielding suspect who'd slashed the tires of a police squad car and was running from officers. Van Dyke also then testified that when he got out of his police vehicle, McDonald raised a knife toward him. However, when called upon by the prosecution in cross-examination to point out where in the police dash cam video that could be seen, the raising of the knife by Laquan McDonald, Van Dyke said the video wasn't from his perspective of the scene that fateful evening of October 20th, 2014. So you're looking at a live picture of the courtroom there. Judge Gaughan runs a tight ship. They're checking in the jury right now. And once they're completed with that, we expect Dan Herbert just got up there. He's walking behind. At some point, we expect that he will officially rest, and there are other things to work out. And then, as far as we understand, the prosecution is going to be presenting some rebuttal witnesses or rebuttal testimony of some sort, unless something happened in the judge's chambers. So let's listen in as we move ahead.
Testify on this issue. Officer Joseph McElligott will testify to the following. That defendant's exhibit 24 is the Firestone Firehawk tire with damage inventoried under inventory number 132-96523, recovered from Chicago Police Department vehicle 8489B815R. That was damaged by Laquan McDonald on October 20th, 2014. Parties further agreed that defendant's exhibit 24 will be moved into evidence without objection. So stipulated?
So stipulated, Judge.
That stipulation is allowed and moved into evidence. Thank Mr. You. Herbert.
Your Honor, at this time, the defense rests.
Consistent with my rulings on your evidence.
Thank yes, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, the defense has completed their case in chief. At this time, state, do you have rebuttal?
We do, Judge. Initially, we'll proceed by way of stipulation and then we'll follow witness.
Thank you very much. Proceed then, Mr. Cullen.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The called as a witness, David March, would testify as follows. On October 20th, 2014, he was a Chicago Police Department detective. On that date, he interviewed the defendant. During the interview, the defendant told Detective March the following. When Walsh slowed the police vehicle alongside McDonald, Officer Van Dyke opened the right front door of the vehicle to exit and confront McDonald. Walsh told Van Dyke to stay in the vehicle as they were too close to McDonald to safely exit their vehicle. When McDonald got to within 10 to 15 feet of Officer Van Dyke, McDonald looked toward Van Dyke. McDonald raised the knife across his chest and over his shoulder, pointing the knife at Van Dyke. In defense of his life, Van Dyke backpedaled and fired his handgun at McDonald to stop the attack. Van Dyke continued to fire his weapon at McDonald as McDonald was on the ground, as McDonald appeared to be attempting to get up, all the while continuing to point the knife at Van Dyke.
Be carried as stipulation,
Your Honor. All right. So stipulated?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank
all right. That stipulation is allowed and moved into evidence. At this time, State, could you call your witness?
State will call Adam Murphy.
Watch your step and stand and face.
prosecuted before this honorable court and jury shall be truly the whole truth, not the whole truth, so
You know, the seat's adjustable, the microphone's live, so please see up to the microphone, adjust the microphone, speak into the microphone. Everybody will be able to hear your testimony. We greatly appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you,
Judge. Officer, would you state your name again and spell for the court report, please?
Sure. It's Officer Adam Murphy, M-U-R-P-H-Y.
And you're a police officer with Cook County Sheriff's Department, correct?
That is correct.
You testified previously in this case?
I did.
And your testimony previously was that you responded to Pulaski Avenue following some other Chicago police officers, correct?
Yes, sir.
I want to turn your attention and I want to ask you a couple of questions about your observations that you made when you arrived on the scene and you walked up to Laquan McDonald. Do you recall that?
Yes, sir.
When you arrived, there were already other Chicago police officers on the scene. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to show you what we have marked and has already been introduced into evidence as People's Exhibit number 226. That's an image of the scene where Laquan McDonald was laying in the street on Pulaski Road, correct?
Yes, sir.
When you arrived, you exited your squad car?
Yes, sir.
And what did you do?
I approached the person laying on the ground.
And that person you now know as Laquan McDonald?
Yes, sir.
What did you see as you walked up to Laquan McDonald on and around his body?
I saw a large amount of blood on the pavement.
Would you describe just generally the diameter or the area that amount of blood covered?
From memory, maybe a foot by a foot.
So about 12 inches by 12 inches.
Correct.
I'm going to play a portion of this video here, officer. See where I stopped it there, correct?
Yes, sir.
Would you describe what you see on the video behind the body of Laquan McDonald? That is, just describe what you see on the pavement behind the body of Laquan McDonald.
Connected, it's touchable, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Right here, looks like a liquid substance of some kind coming from.
And that liquid substance, you saw that liquid substance, correct?
Yes.
Can you describe what that liquid substance was and what it looked like to you?
I believe it to be blood at that time.
You've seen blood on crime scenes in your career before, right?
Yes, sir.
That was blood?
Yes, sir.
And that was flowing from the body of Laquan McDonald?
Yes, it was.
That's two separate blood flows, correct?
In this picture, yes.
I'm going to continue the video, sir. Would you describe what you see that blood flow doing?
It's continuing to expand.
Video speaks for itself. That's all that's happening.
Overall.
It's continuing to expand.
And it's continuing to run away from the body of Laquan towards the curb.
That's correct.
At that moment, when you walked up to Laquan McDonald and you saw that blood flowing from Laquan's body, was there any paramedics on scene?
No.
Did you perform CPR on that
objection?
Overall?
I did not, know.
Did you see anybody?
Weren't you relevant to your emotional abuse?
Did you say?
I overall, you can testify, officer.
Can you repeat the question?
Anybody performed CPR on Laquan McDonald when you saw blood coming out of the body of Laquan?
No.
Paramedics weren't even on scene yet, correct?
Correct.
Thank you, officer. That's all I have.
Cross-examination.
Sheriff, are you required to render aid to a victim by performing CPR?
If it's needed, yes.
Okay. And you didn't do that in this case, correct?
Correct.
And you know that Chicago police are not supposed to do CPR on individuals, correct?
I did not know that. I don't know their policy.
Okay. Would it surprise you if they're not supposed to do any CPR on individuals because they're not trained medical personnel?
I don't know what their procedure is.
I understand you don't know what it is exactly, but my question is, would that surprise you?
To not give aid to somebody?
That it's not that they are told not to give aid to anyone because they are not...
Right now, that's real hearsay, so move on.
Well, that's the policy of the Cook County Sheriff, right?
To render aid, yes.
Okay. And you didn't do it in this case?
No.
Okay. And you talked about... what you described, I think you said it's a large amount of blood, correct?
That's correct.
And obviously you're not a doctor, correct?
I'm not, no.
And you don't know where this blood was emanating from, correct?
Correct.
And when you were here, you testified, I believe, on September 18th, you were called by the state, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And you met with the state, you prepped with them before you testified, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you never testified that there was a large amount of blood on the scene when you testified on September 18th, right?
Correct.
Did the state ever ask you that question during prep sessions?
No.
Okay. And you say a large amount of blood, and you said it was a foot by foot. Our doctor testified that there was about a half a cup of blood on the scene. Do you have any reason to dispute that that would be the amount that was on the scene?
No.
Nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes, sir. I know you're not a doctor, but the blood was coming out of the body of Laquan McDonald, correct?
Yes, it was emanating from him.
Sorry.
No. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Can I have the attorneys over here for discussion?
Oh.
So as the prosecution has begun its rebuttal case, the first person called there, as you saw, was a Cook County police officer who was on the scene that night. We heard from him actually in the initial week, 3 weeks ago, when the prosecution started presenting its case. He was called about arriving on the scene with a lot of officers there, police officers, but he said, testified at that point, that he had gone up to Laquan McDonald, tried to see about getting help, told him to hang on. So we're seeing some pictures now as the camera floats around the courtroom. It's packed. The families have been there for both sides. Laquan McDonald's mother has been there, other relatives throughout, for also for the defendant side of things, his wife. And now let's listen in.
What the good work. Tomorrow we're going to have closing arguments, same time, same place, and then we'll see you as soon as you get here. So, again, you're outstanding. Be careful. Thank you.
All rise for the jury.
Looks like that was it for the rebuttal, just that one particular witness from the prosecution, and it was just to clarify some points in terms of the blood, but the defense got right back in there, and the defense trying to all along make the case from the get-go that Laquan McDonald was dead at the scene or close to dead, and that any life that was detected on the ambulance ride to the hospital was... it wouldn't have mattered. The prosecution has tried to show that Laquan McDonald was actually still alive, and even so at the hospital. So this is a back and forth between when the teen died and what was being done. Now we understand they're coming back in, so it's really unclear. I'm waiting for information from my control room because I can't actually watch the courtroom right now. Are we going back to the courtroom? There we go.
About getting a raise. All right, here's what we have to do. We have to do the jury instructions. They will be of record, and certainly the media will be allowed to have these instructions after I read them to the jury. The reason why we're going to do this in a private session is because they get the law at the appropriate time, and that will only be after closing arguments of the attorneys. So to eliminate any opportunity that they might get the instructions before, it's going to be a sealed hearing. But again, just wait less than 24 hours, you'll be able to get these instructions. So thank you. All right, at this time, court's in recess.
So, closing arguments will be taking place tomorrow, and that is going to be a very interesting part of this case, I can guarantee you, because what is now going to have to happen, the attorneys for both sides are going to be tasked to sort of tie it all together. There, if you've been watching this all along, there have been points in the testimony where it's the prosecution questioning somebody or the defense questioning somebody. These are all strategic questions, but sometimes as a viewer, just taking in and you're not quite sure where they're going with that, or how this ties with the rest, or what's the point they're trying to make. Closing arguments will be the opportunity then to tie all that evidence together. Opening statements were all about saying this is what we're planning to present, and then we'll of course went through all the different witnesses trying to elicit facts, details about the situation. And then closing arguments will be about tying it all together. We're being joined on the phone right now by a legal expert, I believe. Oh, Jim Soto is joining us. He's been with us here live in the newsroom. And Jim, thanks for weighing in for just a second by phone. Didn't get the name right away. So I'm just trying to let viewers know in terms of our closing arguments coming up tomorrow. This is the chance for the attorneys to sew their theory together based on the evidence they presented. Each side will have a slightly different theory, correct?
Oh, there's no question about it. And I don't really think there's going to be much in the way of surprises. I think everyone's known since the beginning of the trial that for the prosecution, it's going to be about the video. And for the defense, it's going to be about trying to distance themselves from the video by demonstrating that the video didn't show things from Jason Van Dyke's perspective.
Right. There was an interesting point yesterday when Officer Van Dyke testified, and it was very emotional at times in for him recalling what had happened. But also he seemed to stand up a bit against the prosecution when they asked him simple questions. But there was also points where he didn't remember, kept saying he didn't remember. So some people looked at that as, well, he's changing his story from what he said at the time, but he said he didn't remember what he said at the time, and then coupled with the defense's psychology expert they had on the stand, we're led to believe that this can be common for police officers under stress after in a shooting situation, that whatever they're saying at the time, or they blank things out, all of that. So the jury's going to have to really kind of look at that for one part. Also, he couldn't, Van Dyke yesterday on the stand, couldn't address where in the video it would show that Laquan McDonald had raised his knife towards Officer Van Dyke, only to say that this is what he saw that night, this is why he fired, and it was from his perspective, which is different from the dash cam video, and also from the defense's own recreation video, is what he tried to say. Did that help or hurt him?
Well, you know, as with every witness, there's going to be aspects of the testimony that each side is going to say favors them, and that's going to be what they emphasize in closing. So, obviously, with Van Dyke, the best thing for the prosecution was probably when Van Dyke said that he had actually talked to his partner about the need to shoot McDonald before they actually rolled up on the scene.
Right.
And you know, from the defense's perspective, he did a good job in testifying in what appeared to be a credible manner that he felt like he was in an imminent risk of harm. I was surprised that there wasn't more, that he didn't do a better job of tying himself to the recreated video. He seemed to distance himself not only from the actual video, but from the recreated one as well by, as you pointed out, saying, that didn't show my perspective. I thought that he could have asked the defense lawyer and the prosecutor to stop the video at the point where you see McDonald's hand just start to move slightly and a slight turn, and say that at that moment I felt that there was going to be attack that was going to occur, or he was going to throw the knife, and that I had to act at that very moment. I didn't have the luxury of waiting to see where the knife ended up. But he didn't do that. He took the position that the video didn't show things from his perspective, and I think that's something that the prosecution is then going to try and exploit in their closing argument.
Well, then can we expect that the defense will try to wrap that up in its own closing argument to address that, because it is a bit of a glaring area?
Sure, that's what you would expect to see from the defense in their closing, that they would use that video and they would show the slightest move towards Van Dyke, stop the video at that point, and then dramatically point out to the jury that this is the moment, that was the moment of truth. Van Dyke didn't have the luxury of waiting. If he didn't shoot at that moment, that knife could have ended up embedded in some part of his body or one of his partners, one of the other police officers' bodies. So that's what I would expect the defense to do, and the prosecution would counter that this is all fantasy, that if there was any kind of a move towards Van Dyke, you would have seen that on the real video, and that's what they'll describe as an animation or a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be the prosecution's view of that.
Jim, when you were here in studio with me, we talked about the charges that Officer Van Dyke is facing in this trial. It's first-degree murder, two counts of first-degree murder, and then there's aggravated battery. Go over again, if you don't mind, what the jurors, of course the judge is going to give the jury instructions in terms of the law, but this case has been so controversial, so polarizing for our community, for the city of Chicago. People made up their minds ahead of time, one way or another. People are talking about, you know, if the officer isn't, they're already posting signs in parts of the city, if the officer isn't found guilty, there are going to be marches or whatever. And it's sad to see that in Chicago. We'd like to believe that, you know, we could rise above this and respect that the jurors have a very tough job ahead of them. The judge is going to give them instructions in terms of looking at all the evidence from both sides, weighing it, but applying it in terms of the law. This officer is charged with first-degree murder and aggravated battery, but of course the big charge is first-degree murder. What is it that those jurors will have to find in order for it to be first-degree murder, to find the officer guilty, or if it's not there, they cannot find him guilty of that?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that, Monica, because it's a critical part of this case. So you're right, he's been charged with first-degree murder. But the judge has the discretion to instruct the jury on second-degree murder. Now, the difference between second-degree murder and first-degree murder is a couple things. For one, if Van Dyke can show that he truly believed he was at a risk that he was about to be attacked, or his other officers, fellow officers were about to be attacked, but the jury would think that that was an unreasonable fear, that's second-degree murder, not first-degree murder, because he really did believe that he was at risk, but it wasn't reasonable. A lot of people think that's what occurred here. The difference between first-degree and second-degree murder in terms of the sentencing is, for a first-degree murder conviction, the minimum sentence is 45 years, and there's a good chance that Jason Van Dyke would spend the rest of his life in prison with a first-degree murder conviction. If he's convicted of second-degree murder, the sentence is anywhere from 4 to 20 years. It's actually probationable, but you wouldn't expect there to be probation in a case like this. So how that jury gets instructed tomorrow could be everything, because if the jury is fighting among itself about whether or not there should be a conviction or an acquittal, and it sees that second-degree murder charge sitting there, there's a really good chance that they'll compromise on that and that he would ultimately be convicted of second-degree murder. So the defense and the prosecution have to figure out whether they want to advocate before the judge and the jury instruction conference to have that charge issued to the jury. You know, the defense want to go for all or nothing. Do they think that they've done a good enough case, a good enough job that they're going to get an acquittal on first-degree murder? So they go for a straight acquittal.
So let me just cut one second, Jim. I just want to be clear on something that was confusing to me, might be confusing to some of our viewers. You said the judge can instruct on second-degree murder as an as another option for the jurors, but that's is that the judge can do that on his own, or this is if the defense wants to go along with that?
Well, the judge has the power to do it on his own. Whether or not he chooses to do that is another story. So you would expect that if the attorneys would ask for it, that the judge would then likely give the instruction. But nobody really knows what's going on behind closed doors, what the prosecution's saying about that, and what the defense is saying about that. So for both sides, to not...
Jim, you're cutting in and out a little bit. I don't know if it's positioning of the phone, but do you feel, as an analyst, looking at the way this thing has been handled by the defense, if it was up to you to call, if you felt they did a good enough job, and to just stay and just roll the dice, you're staying with first-degree murder because you don't think that the prosecution proved that beyond a reasonable doubt. You feel that the evidence you as a defense attorney has presented undermines much of that. So in your mind, there just isn't first-degree murder here, that you'd roll the dice and not go for a second-degree murder, so hoping for acquittal. I think we lost...
If you'd like to make a call,
yeah,
please hang up.
We lost Jim, obviously. So there is that in terms of... we had one of our attorneys, it wasn't Jim, but another attorney who was with us this week, talking about... it was Gal Pasetsky, saying that as a defense attorney, and I think Michael Oppenheimer said it as well, that... that you would, as a defense attorney, potentially you might roll the dice because you felt that the prosecution in your case coming against you did not convict your client beyond a reasonable doubt, did not prove that guilt, and you felt that the evidence you presented undermined much of what the prosecution did. Rather than giving the jury another option, you stick with the highest thing, thinking there's no way they can convict this person of first-degree murder. You roll the dice. You might be right. You might be wrong. I think Jim's back on the line with us. Are you there, Jim?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So my question to you, as an analyst on the outside, if you had to just sort of take a gander at this, and not right or wrong, one way or the other, but just analyzing it legally as if you were in a law school class, the professor, do you feel that if it was up to the defense to put in, ask for second-degree murder, or just stick with first-degree murder and roll the dice, what would you advise in this case? What would you think?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a very difficult one to answer because that kind of decision always has to be made by the client himself because he's the one looking at the prison sentence. So based on everything I've seen here...
What would you advise the client knowing that, you know, it's up to the client?
Right. So I would say that in a case where you're looking at potentially spending the rest of your life in prison, that it would be very difficult to avoid requesting an instruction on second-degree murder because the sentence is so much more lenient than first-degree murder. But I don't know what's going to happen here. Both sides have strong arguments on their sides. One thing that we know that has happened was when we went into this trial, when it started, I think most observers thought that Van Dyke, having already been convicted in a court of public opinion, was going to be convicted in a court of law. And right now, there's powerful arguments on both sides.
And, you know, throughout, Jim, as I shared with you when you were here, I've received emails from our viewers, and I'm thankful to get them. It shows that people are watching, they're engaged in the debate, and sometimes, quite honestly, they were upset with me. They thought that I was taking one side or another, and I wrote each and every one of them back that did contact me personally and say, no, that was never my intention. I always tried to couch these arguments as this is what the prosecution is trying to say, this is what the defense is trying to say, and the difficulty now is for the jurors to put any of their personal opinions they might have had aside and strictly look at the evidence and how it applies to the law. But I understand why people would think that, and it's because it has been so emotional for people. It's been such a polarizing case in our city, and it's been part of a national issue, but here we are in Chicago with this particular case. It's not right to convict an officer just simply because, you know, you want justice because you feel the inner city or certain youths aren't being treated fairly and make a scapegoat. But if the law is there and the evidence is there, then yes, of course, the officer would need to be convicted. But that is the role of the jurors, as far as I can tell, and then the judge instructing them. But also, as you pointed out, people have made up their minds, and it's interesting. I had a lovely email last evening. Well, first of all, a woman who said she was never going to watch again because of something that she had misunderstood that I said, and I explained. And today she actually reached out and said she apologized. She admitted she'd only listened to a bit of it, and she was just, I didn't hear it correctly, but she said that, you know, I'm from a police family, so I take it hard, but I also feel sadness for all involved. And I thought, you know, doesn't that sum it up? There is sadness for all involved. No matter how this goes, there's going to be sadness. The question is, will we be able to stay civil? And I'm imagining that you have the same thoughts, Jim.
Well, there's no question about it, because I think that we all know that there's really no issue today that evokes more emotion from people than police-community relations. And some people have very powerful feelings that are pro-police, and some people have very powerful anti-police feelings, which makes it very difficult in many cases to even seat a jury, because people will tell you, I don't think I can be fair to one side or the other. So within all that emotion, these trials occur, and trials like this one, where we ask jurors to decide cases specifically on the facts. But the facts are disputed, and there's something there for one side and something there for the other side, and people see those facts through their own prism and the way they view emotional issues like police community relations.
Sure.
So that's the interesting thing about trials. You know, they're so driven by emotion, and both sides are trying to evoke those
Absolutely.
Emotions to their favor.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I want to thank you so much for joining us by phone and helping to just sort of couch this a little bit. As for our coverage, that ends it for right now. We'll be back here tomorrow morning when closing arguments get underway in the murder trial for Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke in the 2014 shooting of black teen Laquan McDonald. I'm Monica Schneider. Thanks for being with us.